Welcome back. Part 3, CIOs and Bow Ties. Greg Silberman, your Chief Investment Officer. And on the line, we have Ankur Wariku from Delhi in India. And Ankur is the CEO of Nearby. Nearby was essentially a management buyout of Groupon India. And Ankur has been regaling some interesting tales about big data analyses and behavioral analysis that they've gleaned from some of their consumer data. I would urge you all to go out and take a look at Ankur's LinkedIn profile, but also take a look at his Twitter profile. He puts up something which I just thought was, I think this is probably encapsulates you to the fullest degree, Ankur. He puts a mathematical formula on the top of his Twitter profile, and I'll try and read it out to you, but it looks better in visual. It says 1.1 to the power of 365, which I assume is what, a 10% improvement every day, comes to 37.8, 0.99 to the power 365, which I assume is, you're doing 1% less every day, comes out to 0.03. So 37.8 versus 0.03, I guess, Ankur, you're talking about compounding or not compounding and the effects thereof. So I'll let you comment on that.
I'm a big fan of compounding, and it's ridiculous when I look at myself. So of course everyone knows of money and compounding, and of course Warren Buffett has done such a good job of entertaining and enlightening all of us around that. But I think we don't acknowledge as much of how habits and personalities compound, because it's very hard to track that and it's very hard to measure. So it's natural that we don't pay as much attention. But when I look at myself, I came back from the US age 24, no idea what to do in life. I came out of an MBA program at age 26, kind of knew what I wanted to do. I quit my job at 29 to become an entrepreneur. And at 33, I was managing Groupon APAC. And today at 39, I have my own setup, which is a $100 million setup, a profitable venture, VC funded, and all of that. And to have this in less than 10 years or 15 years, there's nothing but compounding, nothing at all. Am I the smartest person I know? Clearly not. Am I the most hardworking person I know? Clearly not. But I think what I've done is just exactly what you described in the photograph. It's a 1% improvement every day, which gives me a 38x at the end of the year, as against a 3% if I were to diminish.
I love it. Congratulations. So just tell us a little bit more. I mean, explain to us what 1% more of something looked like every day. You know, just give us an example. Did you do 1% more reading or something? I mean, what was it?
So I think it's to acknowledge that whatever you're doing is already part of a historic progress, and for it to compound, you need to keep adding some base value to it and let the compounding take over. Now, what I mean by that is you need to find newer and newer ways of making yourself more valuable than who you are yesterday. It could mean more reading. It could mean meditating more. It could be even sleeping more. It could be eating right more than yesterday. It could be drinking less than what you did yesterday. It could be smoking less than what you did yesterday. It could be exercising more than what you did. And all of that then adds in. I don't think, and this is one thing that I did deliberately, is because it's very hard to measure the 1% progress every day, what you essentially do is look at it from a cumulative chunk perspective. And I set myself yearly goals a trivial way of measuring is, am I actually embarrassed by who I was last year? And if I am not embarrassed by who I was last year, I most likely have not progressed. Like I genuinely need to come across as a stupid fool.
Yeah.
Like it's through my blog posts, it's through my videos. It's when I look at my my writings from last year. I'm like, oh my God, this is cringe. So juvenile. Yeah, exactly. Like, who is this person? I would not be friends with this person. Look at my videos and like, oh my God, this is such a poor rendition. It's poor articulation.
Right.
It's poor thought processing. So you just realize you're becoming a different person every year. And you don't know how that's working, but clearly after a 10-year period, you realize.
You look back and see. Oh man, that's terrific. If anything that our listeners could take away, I've had the honor of interviewing some very wonderful guests, and they all pretty much say what you say is, you know, in some way or another, get out of your comfort zone, improve little by little. So, okay, let's go to a few more points to hit here, Ankur. You speak about your relationship with money, and I'm just looking back at my notes, but I think you even said something to the effect of that you maybe hate money, or you're pretty negative, or you certainly don't care about it. What's that all about?
So the background, Greg, is we grew up with no money. We were always hand to mouth, no savings, definitely no discretionary spend. You couldn't get what you desired. We never took vacations. One thing that my parents were always very particular about is, come what may, we'll always send them to a good school and get them educated the right way. And that's where I feel we got the best of what we had.
Mm.
But because I saw struggle so much, I grew up hating money because I thought that money was the cause of our misery. Money was the reason why we were not happy. Money was the reason why we couldn't do the things that we wanted, why my mom had to still work and my dad had to still work, and then we couldn't get that thing that we wanted and so on. So in hindsight, maybe this dismissive view against money or this despise against it made me not respect it or fall in love with it and definitely not chase it as I found other people. I got to a point where I hated it so much that it didn't matter whether I had it or not. And it actually manifests in the way that I operate even today. I am I'm well off today. I'm very fortunate to not think about money anymore. And that doesn't make me hold on to it. That surprisingly makes me extremely generous to the point of being flippant about it. I would help people as much as I can. I would give it to people that I think deserve it more, or at least deserve it because of the hard work and so on. I would invest in very high risk startups because I just feel that the entrepreneurs have something good going on, and I wouldn't care about whether I get that money back or not. Which makes me, by the way, a very bad investor, I would admit that any waking day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually don't care because I feel that I have enough for myself and for making sure that my kids and my family just have a comfortable life.
Right.
I have no plans of saving for my kids. They have to watch out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good spot to be in. And I like my relationship with money.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, just to encapsulate that, there is, you know, we're big students of behavioral economics here. We feel like markets are driven 90% by emotion, 10% by fundamentals. They're, you know, that's skewed. And what you've articulated is what we call the nature of paradox. And the nature of paradox is if you don't chase something, something actually tends to come to you. And that's exactly what you've put out there. It's almost like a real world rule in behavioral finance. So kudos to you. Well, however that happened, it's working for you.
I'm glad.
Happiness is a constant feeling of having no regrets. That's another great one. What's that about? I mean, how did that come about?
I learned it from my dad. He's had a very hard life professionally. On Father's Day, which was this Sunday, people were just floating about what are the lessons you learned from my dad. And I'd written about this long time back, and I just pulled it out and I pasted it again on LinkedIn. It's kind of gone viral now. And the story is that he joined this really young pharma company. He was a pharmacist. And within a year of joining that company, he got another offer, which paid him almost twice as much as he was getting here. gave him a car. And it was like 1985, so it's like a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he quit his job and joined this new company. And this new company shut down in a year. And this original company that he had joined went on to become a $25 billion company. And he really never recovered from that. Like he did odd jobs, really, really struggled. But one thing that I love is I don't think there was ever a day where he said, I regret taking that decision. Because he was like, there is nobody in that spot who would have not taken that decision.
Mm-hmm.
It was the right decision to take at that point of time. Mm-hmm. It was just a risk, and unfortunately, it didn't pay out for me. Mm-hmm. But I'll be a fool to say I regret taking that decision because it was the right decision. So what I've learned from him is regret and failure is just a state of mind. It's something we construct. It's something that we live by. It's something that we allow ourselves to be destroyed by. And happiness for me is this constant feeling of not worrying about what people think and not having any regrets about what you've done.
Yeah, I think that's phenomenal. I love the constant feeling part of it. You know, it's almost a, yeah, no, we can speak about that all day, but we clearly don't have all day. So Ankur, let's wrap this up. Fascinating interview. You mentioned that you're passionate about photography. Is that one of your great hobbies in life?
It is.
Anything in specific that you like to photograph?
I love capturing cities. And whenever we as a family go on a vacation, contrary to how most people plan their vacation, we like to be in the middle of action. So we love going to Paris or a Rome or a New York or a Singapore or a Dubai as against going to the Bora Bora Islands or Maldives or Mauritius,
mm-hmm.
because I love surrounding myself with people and action and architecture and blue sky and hustle bustle and retail and mobility all across, and that's what I tend to capture. I've moved from more and more SLR-based photography to more and more phone photography, and I think phones are getting just better and better every day.
Mm-hmm.
So there are occasionally times when I use my SLR specifically with a certain lens, but most of the photography that I do today is through the iPhone. Still a very, very keen clicker.
Yeah, technology is great. Well, there you go, folks. I mean, I said it at the beginning. This is the quintessential Renaissance man, Ankur Wariku. You can see multidisciplinary, and he's just all over all the time, a lot of energy. So, Ankur, thank you very much for spending some time with us today. Lovely to learn about you, to learn about Nearby, to learn about India. I will, if I hadn't decided already, I have now officially decided to make a trip over to your wonderful country. And, you know, we'll certainly be knocking on your door, and maybe we'll find a nice discount place nearby that we can go and have a meal at.
I'll be waiting for you to visit India. So make it happen soon. And thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It's really, really enjoyable.
Last question. I'm sorry, last question.
Please.
Do you think your boys are going to pull off this World Cup victory?
I have a very strong suspicion they will. I'm hoping for an India-England final, and I'm hoping for us to be champions again.
Oh, well, there's nothing better than beating England. Even a South African can agree with
that. I can imagine.
All right, wonderful. Listen, have a great day. Best of luck to you. And
thank you so much.
Be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.